everybody. This is Cal Banyan. This is Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, Etc. with Meredith Locker. Gosh, let me tell you what. If you're watching this video anywhere else except calbanyan.com, you want to go there right now, just type in Cal Banyan. That's B-A-N-Y-A-N. It's probably saying it right down here at the bottom of the video. Why? Because there's tons of information on that site, including this video and all the notes that go with it, links and extra information that goes along with this show. And while you're there, become a VIP member, because you do that and you'll instantly be taken away to another page that gives you instant access to all the videos we've done. Over 100 videos. It's probably the most extensive free hypnosis training database anywhere in the universe through infinity. Okay. Gosh. Let me tell you about Meredith. She's my co-host today and most of the time, although we'll squeeze Elron in there once in a while. Let me tell you what, she is amazing. She's beautiful, she's smart, she has a great sense of humor, and she spends far too much time with chihuahuas. She's got a master's degree in psychology, and she's a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous hypnotherapist, a one percenter. Hey, Meredith, what do you think about that idea about spending too much time with chihuahuas?
Oh, Cal, that is clear that you have not spent enough time with chihuahuas. Because you know what? If you had, you would be spending far too much time with them as well.
Oh.
They're just pure positive energy, let me tell you.
I saw a picture of your newest one, and she's cute. I have to admit it.
She's a little cutie. A little cutie patootie, and has more personality than pretty much anyone else I know, except for maybe you.
You're awesome.
Well, so are you, and I don't know if everybody knows you, since they may have just stumbled upon this fabulous podcast while surfing the web, but Cal Banyan is not only the first person to have ever been on the internet. I think that's true, right, Cal?
I was online in 1984, even before there was an internet.
Yeah, so you might have actually been one of the very first.
I had a 300 baud modem. I was way back there in the olden days.
But Cal is the man in hypnosis. He has created Five Path. He created Seventh Path Self-Hypnosis. He teaches and trains all over the world, mostly here in Tustin, California. He does still see clients. And definitely, if I had a family member or a friend, I would send them to Cal in Tustin, California at the Banyan Hypnosis Center. And he is just, you know, one of the smartest people I know. And I'm such a grateful person for being a part of this show. Thank you so much, Cal.
Well, you know, I'm grateful to you because, I mean, you drive all the way up from L.A. You had to go through tons of traffic and there was delays and all that stuff. And you come up time after time after time and you do this podcast for me, and you don't get paid for it. You know, we mentioned that you have practice and stuff, but I mean, you really do this out of the goodness of your heart to help the profession. You're awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. It is fun, and I love getting these questions, so please do keep sending them. We are going to have some no-Cal episodes, and we're going to need plenty of your questions to answer. So go ahead and send those to me directly at meredith@yourpathhypnosis.com, or you can post them on Facebook. I do check out the Ask Cal page, the Hypnosis Etc. page on Facebook, so it's facebook.com/hypnosisetc, and we also check it out on rhypnospace.com, the Ask Cal group, or sometimes I even, you know, pull things off of the Five Path group on Yahoo if you belong to that. So lots of ways to get information to us. Also on calbanyan.com, hopefully that's where you're watching this, because there's links and posts and all kinds of things right down there as Cal does it. And so down below, if you're watching on calbanyan.com, there's a place where you can add feedback and you can post questions there. I look there as well. So lots of ways to get to us. Happy to answer your questions and bring your challenges with your cases. I know that there are lots of new graduates and that are kind of dealing with new things as they get out there into the trenches, if you will. And we're going to bring some of those questions here to you today.
Hey, you know, that's really great. I want you to, you kind of slipped it in there. Tell them about the No Cal episodes. We've done them in the past, but just a few. And you brought it up. Tell them about the No Cal.
Well, Cal is going to Malaysia for a very long time.
And Singapore.
And it's a very long time. And so in his absence, I am going to be filming some episodes with Elron, and she doesn't know this yet, but hopefully with Celeste. Now, Celeste used to be the person that did these podcasts, and when she left, she did mention that she'd be willing to fill in. So if she's free, we're going to see if she'll rejoin us for an episode or two. And so it's going to be myself and Elron and hopefully Celeste, and we're going to answer your questions and bring some information and maybe share some things that we wish we would have known when we first started, some things like that. So I'm looking forward to it. Hope you join us.
That's awesome. I'm going to really look forward to seeing those.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, last episode I said I was going to say what I was doing tomorrow.
What are you doing?
I'm having some friends over and we're just going to, you know, it's California and the sun is shining and one of my bicycle riding buddies and some other friends have come over and my bicycle riding buddy, he bought me, he's my mentor, not in bicycle riding, not in hypnosis, but he's helping me learn about scotch. And he bought me a bottle of 18-year-old Glenfiddich, Scottish scotch. And so I'm going to open it and learn to enjoy scotch with him and all my friends. So if I have any scotch aficionados out there that want to recommend a good scotch, lay it on me. Put it in the comments below. This is probably going to help my reputation a lot, you know. I used to be just kind of a beer guy. You know, out on the patio, I have a beer once in a while. Back in my hard partying days, I'm a Harley. Boy, I drink a lot of beer. But when I moved to California, everyone was into wine, and I was drinking some wine, but I find it bloated me. So a friend of mine said, hey, you like to have a cigar? I said, sure, I like a nice cigar once in a while. He says, you should try scotch. And so now I'm learning about that. So.
Yes, well, scotch goes much better with cigars, Cal.
So Memo's my scotch mentor.
Wonderful. Hi, Memo. Memo's a great guy. All right. Do you have any other announcements?
So you talked about Facebook. We can talk about, I haven't said this in a few weeks, but it's brand new. Early registration discounts, helping everybody out, making it more possible. 90-day, 30-day, 90-day, 60-day, and 30-day early registration discounts. To find out what my classes are for a certification, for advanced training, go to hypnosiscenter.com. That's where all that stuff is. Go there. I've got a class coming up in March, and I usually have about four during the year. That's where all the information is. All right, let's roll.
All right. So we have a new graduate asking a question about SSEs, subsequent sensitizing events. And so this is, of course, a five-pather. So this is somebody who's doing the five-phase process. And this would be part of phase two, which is age regression. And as we age regress back, we find SSEs before we get to the ISE, which is the initial sensitizing event. And Cal, is there any more detail about that you want me to give to those people out there? Is that good?
Sounds good.
Okay. So what this person is finding is that some of her clients are having a lot more SSEs than she ever expected they might. And she's like, wow, this might take forever. How do you determine which SSEs to revisit to work through on the way back towards the present after you've worked through the initial sensitizing event? Do you go through all of them? Do you just pick some of them? And if only some, how do you decide?
Oh, that's a good question. All right, and I hope five pathers around the world are watching these videos. So much pertinent information. And of course, all hypnotherapists and hypnosis professionals can benefit from what I talk about. Let's see. So let's imagine a timeline right across here, and here is now. And we start taking that person back to these different events on the timeline, and all of those events that come after the ISC, which is way over here at the beginning, are called SSEs. And sometimes you'll just have people bump back two or three times, and sometimes you'll have a whole bunch of them. So I think now the ones that are revealed get revealed automatically as you're going back in time. You know, is that feeling familiar or new? It's familiar. And so we just keep going back and back and back and back until we get to the first event that's associated with the problem, really the beginning event called the ISC, the initial sensitizing event. So this person is asking me on the way back, because after we take care of the ISC, do an informed child work, that kind of stuff, once we've neutralized the cause of the problem, then we have a tremendous opportunity ahead and that we can now begin to go back towards now visiting those SSEs. But what if you got 47 events that were uncovered? How many do you visit? Oh, gosh. I always like to visit at least three or four. Why? Because as I visit each one, and I let's say the person had a fear of spiders. You know, they start off here. There's a feeling inside you get every time you see a spider, one of those big, hairy, eight-legged beasts. And as I count from one to five, that feeling comes up as strong and powerful as ever been. We bring that feeling up, then we follow it back to an earlier time. Boom. And we go to an earlier time and an earlier time and an earlier time. And let's say we visit 20 earlier times before we get to the initial sensitizing event. Do we really need to go through all 20 of those? I don't think so. On the way back to now, no. What I would do is I would look at, use some judgment here, and that is I'll probably go to the very first one that appeared right after the ISC. Because what I want to do is I want to go there and see if the work I did in the ISC stuck. You know, I gave them the information. For example, let's say they saw the spider and somebody else got really upset and then it got imprinted in their brain that, hey, spiders are really dangerous and they kill people. And you know, that might be true of a very, very, very small number of people, but sometimes it gets to an arachnophobic level, okay? And we want to let them know that, hey, nobody got really hurt by that spider, and spiders are the same as they were before that event, after that event, and we get them so they can go through that event again without experiencing all the fear. And then I'll take them to the next SSE, the event that happened right after, where they, in their history, they were afraid of spiders. And I want to take them through that event to check, to make sure that the suggestions and the changes that occurred, the insights that occurred in the ISE still exist in the first SSE, subsequent sensitizing event. And then what I'll do is I'll pick three or four other SSEs that I think were the most emotionally charged, for example, or were most important in the reinforcement of that internal behavior that that person has, that internal, the emotion, and the which is fear, and the avoidance behavior that's developed since. And I'll take them to just, you know, three or four of those to make sure that the change has been adopted well into the subconscious mind. And as I do that, in addition to just checking to see that the change has been fully accepted, it also reinforces that that change has been accepted. Now they go through those events from the past for a second time without the fear. Now we don't change what happened. They still see the spider, but they go through the event without experiencing the belief or the fear that they had when they came in. How's that?
That is great. And I think that this is really important because I think this is a major issue that we come up with every single one of our clients. And, you know, what I find is that lots of times people visit SSEs that are very similar. And so there may be, you know, like five different SSEs that are all sharing something that's about the same, and then there may be five other ones that are about something totally different. And yeah, it's silly to work through, you know, each of the ones that are exactly the same as another one again. I mean, it would just be so tedious and it would be costly for your clients. And so you're exactly right, you know, getting into just the ones that you really need to get to the bottom of the issue.
Excellent.
And now, what about, I know that this has come up other times, I'm trying to think where I've heard this before, but I know this question has come up. I know that sometimes we find less emotionally charged SSEs, although some people, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not an important SSE. So would that be a way of deciding not to go through that SSE if it doesn't seem that emotionally charged, or You know, how would you speak to that, Cal?
Well, you got to weigh a couple of things. One, you know, if it's really emotionally charged, you definitely want to take the person through that. You know, the most salient, the most obvious SSEs are important. And one of the things that can make them important is that they're emotionally charged. I mean, a lot of fear. But the other times is sometimes it's just really important. For example, sometimes, now we talked about ISEs and we talked about SSEs, but there's also another event called the symptom-producing event. And the symptom-producing event is the event along that timeline, which may not be the ISC, that actually started the manifestation of the symptom or the behavior. And it might be kind of small. It might just be the idea, gosh, if I started smoking, I would fit in better with this crowd I want to get into. Now, that wasn't a super emotionally charged event, but it was a very pivotal event. So, of course, I'd want to go through the SPE, the symptom-producing event, if one exists, separate than from the ISC, because it's very, very important, because that's where the behavior of the symptom started. How's that?
Perfect. Great. I think we have time for another question. Are you ready?
Let's squeeze it in.
Okay. Now, this is from Clint, and Clint brought an interesting case forward. He had never experienced this situation before and was kind of wondering if this is normal and should he expect this in the future or if this is unusual. He said, is it common to find pre-initial sensitizing events, so pre-ISE, the child at 3 years old, feels good, comfortable, apparently okay, grown-up acknowledges child, there's offering of love, security, protection, always present, but the child doesn't believe the grown-up. And so then what Clint chose to do was to age regress on the distrust, okay? And so there's a lot of stuff here, but he chose to age regress on the distrust to 2 years old, where the mother lied, failed to keep a promise, and this is prior to what he determined was the ISC of feeling sad because dad was late. And then apparently he age regressed on the sadness same day, 6 hours earlier, the child was happy, secure, what have you. So it looks like he ended up finding two separate ISEs is what I'm gathering here. First of all, how would you have handled that? The child not believing the grown-up. Would you have age regressed more, or would you have dealt with that right in the moment, Cal?
Okay, well, let me ask you something. Does he give any indication of what that client was in for?
No.
What the issue was?
No.
Did he give any indication on what the emotion was that he first started the affect bridge with?
He just said, well, initially, no. He did say that it was sadness towards the ISC.
Okay, but we don't know how he started the regression,
no,
is that
we
right?
No, we don't.
Okay, because that would be important. Because did we start off with the affect bridge? Now, for you guys that, you know, you're just learning this stuff, affect bridge is where we bridge back in time using the emotion, and another word for emotion is affect, you know, the feeling associated with the problem. And that would kind of have to do with what I do when I get to the ISE, you know. And so once Clint got to the ISE, it appeared, from what I'm understanding of the question, that doing the informed child work neutralized the initial emotion, but then maybe that didn't happen either. The child didn't trust the adult, is that right?
Yes.
And so maybe they didn't get through the informed child work because if the child aspect of the self doesn't believe the information that's being given the child aspect, then you're not going to get a good informed child work done. So one of the things is, if you go to an ISC, you believe it's an ISC, and there's like 7 things you do to confirm an ISC. And one of the things we do to confirm the ISC is that, you know, they're familiar, new, and they say that it's new. We go before it, We suggest that they now go to the first time, and if it was the actual ISE, they would go back to the same event, but frequently they'll go back to an earlier time. And in class, I really talk about seven different things that we do. And this is actually a finer technique that most people don't understand. And that is when you are doing the informing child work and all of a sudden the child is resistant to the information that grown-up is giving, then that means that you're not really at the ISC. That event that you're at is just another SSE. And so you want to go ahead and follow that feeling back further. Now, in this case, he said the feeling was not trusting. Now, not trusting is not a feeling. Not trusting is what they're thinking. So if you don't trust your mother and you are a child or infant, then the emotion is going to be fear. Because if you can't trust your mother, something bad could happen. And that's the thought that elicits fear. So I would continue to regress on the fear until I can verify the ISE to the fear. Now, if you regress on the I don't trust what my mother's saying or I don't trust what grown-up is saying, then what you're doing is you're doing a cognitive bridge. And that's a viable alternative, but I always recommend that you do an affect bridge over the cognitive bridge, all things being equal, because emotion is more powerful than thought as far as energy. Emotion is energy, and a thought is fleeting and not as powerful as like anger and sadness. And we're going to have a more reliable bridge to the past, to the origin of the problem with an affect bridge or emotion bridge than we do with just a cognitive bridge. And I don't feel like I've answered all of it. There was a little bit more to it, wasn't there, Meredith?
Well, you know, he's just really wondering how often this might happen.
Oh, it can happen. It can happen rather frequently. It doesn't happen all the time. But the problem is what he thought was the ISC, if he thought that was an ISC, is not the ISC. Oh, actually, the question was, is it possible there's two ISCs?
Well, that was my question.
Because there was two emotions, sadness, and what was the other one, fear?
Well, what he was saying was, you know, the distrust, which I identified as fear. And so, yeah, it would be the sadness and the fear.
Okay.
He had felt he'd found the ISE. And so, you know, I guess the two options would be that one, like you said, it may not actually be the ISE, but instead an SSE, or two, that he's dealing with two separate ISEs here. Is that viable?
Okay, just for the purpose of discussion, we need to understand that, okay, the cause of sadness is the perception of loss of someone or something important, and the cause of fear is thinking something bad is going to happen. So those two emotions can be generated from the same event. For example, let's say the child goes from a trusting mother state to a not trusting mother state. Something happens and now I can't trust my mom. Okay, I already talked about how that can generate fear. Now, it could also generate sadness, because sadness comes from loss. So if the child perceives that they've lost this ability to trust their mother, then the child can experience both sadness and fear. Now, also, there's a chance that there could be two ISEs, but with what we know about this particular client, this particular situation, I would say that the time visited may not have been the ISC. I would regress farther on the fear. If once I get back to the ISC of the fear, I would find out what's happening, what are they thinking, what are they feeling. If they're thinking, oh gosh, something bad might happen, that's fear, and gosh, now I can't trust my mother, I've lost that trust, then it's sadness, and now I can explain both emotions from the one ISC. Now, another probability is that this time, whoever's watching this is probably going to have to watch this or listen to it a couple of times, because it's kind of an advanced age regression question. Now, if that ISC was not an ISE, but rather an SSE, subsequent sensitizing event, and we regressed on the fear, and the fear did not have sadness associated with it, then the SSE may have been the SSE for fear, but also the ISE for sadness, because in this fearful subsequent event, some other time after the fear had started, they went in there, wow, you know, now I've lost someone or something of importance, so it's possible that an SSE could be an ISE for another emotion. How's that?
Good. And so in order to move forward, in this case at least, it seems like he had to go back, if that is the case, and it is the ISE for one emotion and the SSE for another, but the child wasn't accepting or believing the grown-up, then, you know, he had to, in order to move forward, continue to regress and resolve the secondary ISE.
Okay, don't say secondary.
Sorry.
Yeah, because we reserve that for secondary emotions, right?
Indeed. So the other.
Yeah. So the he'd take care of the ISE of fear, and then he'd go to that event, which is the SSE of fear, but an ISE for the sadness. And now, an interesting thing about these things, and I won't get into it a lot because we're probably getting short on time, is we don't always neutralize the emotion. What we're going to do is we're going to find out, from talking to the grown-up aspect of the client and also with everything that the hypnotist or hypnotherapist knows about the situation and life in general, is that emotion based in reality? Now, if it's not based in reality, then we want to neutralize it, and the informing child work will do that. But sometimes the fear is based in reality. Now, this is particularly the emotion sadness. People really do lose important things and people in their lives. And if for some reason that we find out that the emotion that we've just visited is an emotion that's based in reality. An earlier episode, I said, all feelings are good when they're being generated from accurate perceptions. And if we go back to a time when we're 2 or 3 years old, we're making all kinds of inaccurate perceptions because we're kids, and we can check that perception. If it's inaccurate, the informed child work will neutralize it because we will give them a more accurate perception, and that will neutralize the emotion. But if they really did lose something, or if there was something really unfair done, then what we're going to do is we're going to validate that emotion, and we're going to leave it in place. If you really lose someone important to you, like a mother or a brother, you're supposed to be sad. We're not going to try to neutralize that with some kind of hypnotic technique. And that sadness is good, and it's going to be useful later on in life as the person, the sadness, for example, of someone who lost their mother, that sadness inside of them is going to motivate them to adopt another mother figure in their life. And we all need mother figures. How's that?
Yes, I love it. And it's absolutely true. You know, if there is, though, the fear that I'm going to die because I lost my mom, that would be a neutralizable, necessary to neutralize misperception.
All right. How much more time we got?
We're done. It's time to wrap it up, Cal.
Yay!
I think that I milked you dry with this last Cal segment going into our no Cal segment.
Oh, I can hardly wait to watch your videos with you and Elrond and perhaps Celeste. And who knows? Maybe you can even rope Maureen into doing one. That's going to be a little bit tougher. But I think that would be great. I'm going to really look forward to doing to watching those myself. And in the meantime, I'm going to be off in Singapore and Malaysia, and I'm going to be missing riding my bicycle because, you know, I usually do 100-plus miles a week on my bicycle, and, you know, it keeps the heart and lungs and everything, you know, working really good. I'm going to get you on the bike one of these days, you bike riding person. I know you are at heart.
Y'all need to come and help Cal ride so that he doesn't push me into it all the time. We need bike riders. Come on in.
Every Sunday, Memo and I, we do a ride. We call it Guiltless Tacos. And it's a 45-mile ride. We do 42 miles out to Main Street, where the pier is in Huntington Beach. We have a taco or some menudo or something. And then we get back on our bicycles, and we neutralize it by riding it back home. So we call it Guiltless Tacos. And any hypnotist out there that wants to do that 45-mile ride with us, please let us know. Email me at calbanion.com, and we'll give you the time and place.
Beautiful. Well, thank you all for tuning in. This is Meredith Locker signing off.
Cal Banion, go to Hypnosis Etc. Wait a second. This is Hypnosis Etc. Go to facebook.com/hypnosisetc. That's ETC. And find out what's going on with this show. That's where I hang out. That's it. Over and out. This recording is the property of Cal Banion and Cal Banion's Banion Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.